Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I am your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening today. The drug of the day today is going to be atorvastatin, but before I get to that, obviously, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Go subscribe and follow there and get your free 31-page PDF. It's a great little study guide, refresher on the top 200 drugs, and I pulled out some of the most important things that are usually tested on and or things that you're going to actually see in real life with regards to those top 200 drugs. So again, go get that at reallifepharmacology.com, absolutely free, simply just an email for subscribing. And we'll get you out emails when there's new podcasts and or new content available for you there. So go check that out, reallifepharmacology.com. All right, so getting into the drug of the day today, atorvastatin, brand name is Lipitor, and this has been one of the heavy hitters all throughout my career. This drug is used every day. I pretty much see this medication used. It is a statin, of course, and it lowers cholesterol is its primary use there. Mechanistically, not going to spend a ton of time on it, but if you go back, I did do statins early on as a general class, so you can listen to that if you want a little bit more details on the mechanism of action. But it is an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor, and this is the rate-limiting step, basically, in the production of cholesterol is the kind of quickest way I can sum it up there. Uses, we're going to prevent, reduce the risk of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, which is done by decreasing cholesterol. And I wanted to focus a little bit more so on, what makes atorvastatin different. So one of the first things I think of as a clinical pharmacist is atorvastatin is more lipophilic. Compare that to rosuvastatin, which I'll have a podcast on that coming up in the next few weeks or month or two here. Compare that to like rosuvastatin, that's more hydrophilic. So where that matters clinically is if you've had a patient that doesn't tolerate one for some reason, and obviously that tolerance isn't significant or life-threatening, you're likely to probably try another statin. Obviously, it's going to take some education and potentially some good discussion with the patient to say, hey, why are we doing this? But switching from a lipophilic to a hydrophilic or vice versa, we can potentially maybe have a slightly reduced risk, or at least gives them an opportunity to have a little different variation there on what type of statin medication they're getting. So again, atorvastatin, more on the lipophilic side of things. Intensity or statin intensity is also something I have to mention with atorvastatin. And one of the reasons why it's used so often is because it is or it can be a higher intensity statin. And like with anything, dose matters. So typically, atorvastatin is considered a moderate intensity statin when you're using dosages of 10 to 20 milligrams. And that's going to typically equate to a ballpark reduction in LDL of between 30 and 50% for most patients. Again, we can, that's an average. So, some patients might be more than that. Some patients might be less than that. With the high intensity, that is classified in the 40 to 80 milligram range. So higher intensity statins are typically going to be used in patients that have had a previous cardiovascular event, such as a heart attack, for example, or maybe they have diabetes with other risk factors. That's where we're going to use the higher intensity, the 40 to 80 milligram statin therapy there. So hopefully that gives you a little summary of kind of where atorvastatin lies. And again, this is why it's used so frequently, is because we can touch those higher intensity levels if a patient needs it. For example, those folks at high cardiovascular risk. Compare that to a drug like lovastatin, for example. Lovastatin, we can't get to high-intensity doses. We can't lower LDL as much as we might like in some of those higher-risk folks. There was an alert that I did want to mention, which this was news to me just recently, and that is from the FDA, and it's as of over the last summer here, July 2021. And there's actually been a request from the FDA to remove the contraindication in pregnancy from the prescribing information. Okay, so all throughout my career, it's been absolutely, you cannot use a statin. Absolutely not in pregnancy. And while, you know, the data and evidence still leans that way towards, yeah, probably not, FDA really wanted that removed just in case there is a potential rare patient that may be at crazy high cardiovascular risk for some reason. So that would potentially allow a provider to have a risk-benefit discussion with a pregnant individual. So again, I don't know if you're ever going to see a statin used in pregnancy, and I would be extremely nervous about that if I did as a pharmacist, if I was in a dispensing or a consulting role. But there is that alert from the FDA in July 2021, and I'd encourage you to check it out for yourself just to kind of read the language and that type of thing. So again, yeah, very risky thing to potentially do, but the FDA did put out that alert, and you should definitely go read it if you have a situation where somebody is considering a statin in pregnancy or something like that. Administration time. This is a question that often comes up with atorvastatin and statins in general. Atorvastatin, the package insert does say without regard to time. My personal opinion on this, I want the patient to take that statin, if it's indicated, obviously. I want the patient to take that statin or atorvastatin when they are going to remember the most. These drugs are notorious for patients forgetting to take them or just kind of stopping after a period of time. Adherence is so critical, and if I see somebody's cholesterol go up, one of the first things I'm going to think about is, okay, did they stop taking it, or have they not been taking it every day as they should be? So, again, recommendation by the package insert is doesn't really matter what time you give it, and there are other statins that generally have a shorter half-life that are typically recommended to be dosed in the evening. So with atorvastatin, I really don't care too much, but I would rather obviously have them take it at a time that's convenient for them and that they're actually going to remember to take it versus, you know, absolutely should be in the morning or absolutely should be in the evening. Doesn't matter too much to me there. Adherence is critical. Adverse effect profile, I kind of went through that in the original statin podcast. Myopathy, of course, muscle pain, soreness. Be a little careful in elderly patients. I do see this slip through the cracks sometimes where it isn't really thought of due to the patient, you know, being on multiple medications. So maybe the med list wasn't looked at thoroughly. Or patient just says, yeah, you know, I had some generalized aches and pains. I've started to take some ibuprofen or some Tylenol. And it may kind of slip through the cracks that, okay, well, maybe they had a recent increase in their statin dose. Maybe they started a drug that raised concentrations. So really pay attention to any kind of new muscle soreness, maybe particularly in our elderly folks where they're on a bunch more meds and it might not be clear as to what's causing that. Rare liver risks with statins, rare risk for rhabdomyolysis. So again, extremely, extremely rare. I've only seen, you know, probably a few cases in my career as a pharmacist for 10 plus years now. So it is pretty rare that happens. So we typically don't monitor CPK and liver function routinely, but if you've got patients with potential symptoms of rhabdomyolysis and or hepatic issues, then obviously we're going to clinically check those levels, the CPK and LFTs. And obviously, monitoring parameters, you're going to check cholesterol function there as well. One other thing, just for patient education standpoint, remind patients that this doesn't lower cholesterol right away. It doesn't work, you know, within a day or two, okay? So it takes time for it to work, and that's why we, you know, typically start a statin or start atorvastatin, and we're going to check lipids in, you know, usually 3 to 6 months, kind of depending upon the urgency and some other factors that may play into that clinical decision. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like ambulatory care, NAPLEX, BCPS, BCGP, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. Got a growing list of resources there. In addition, if you're a nurse, physician, another healthcare profession, we've got Amazon books, Audible books, lots of different content that can definitely help you learn or potentially relearn pharmacology, what you may have lost in some of those classes over time and not using some of that information. So again, go support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. Lots of highly rated books on there that hopefully you can benefit from and obviously enjoy as well. Maybe find some case studies and things like that too. That may allow you to think a little bit differently rather than just memorizing information. So again, meded101.com/store. All right, so wrapping up with drug interactions, the first thing I think about is additive rhabdomyolysis risk. So drugs like fibrates, so that would be like fenofibrate, gemfibrozil, over-the-counter like red yeast rice, niacin potentially. I do pay attention to those, and if you know those meds are felt that it's absolutely necessary, it's like you're going to want to pay a little closer attention to any type of symptoms like muscle pain and soreness that are going to be indicative of rhabdomyolysis. Another one that may come up in the hospital is daptomycin. So a couple things we can do if it's daptomycin's an antibiotic. If it's going to be short-term use of daptomycin, I have seen the statin held, so like atorvastatin. If it's felt that they're a little concerned, we want to continue, you know, both medications, then I have seen the dose of that statin potentially lowered and or monitoring CPK. For that increased risk of rhabdomyolysis. So kind of a few different options there, kind of depending upon what's going on. There may be another drug available as well that you can substitute for daptomycin if the patient is on a drug like atorvastatin. Okay, so there are some interactions with 3A4 here that you should pay attention to that might increase concentrations of atorvastatin. Clarithromycin, grapefruit juice, cimetidine, amiodarone, verapamil, those are just a few examples there. So really pay attention to that. I have seen that happen where a patient was on atorvastatin 80, they were started on clarithromycin, and all of a sudden they started feeling muscle soreness, muscle pain. Well, what likely happened was a drug interaction, and concentrations of atorvastatin went up due to that drug interaction, and obviously the patient started experiencing adverse effects due to those higher atorvastatin concentrations. Same thing on the flip side, just finishing this off here, we got to think about inducers as well. So if you got a patient on St. John's wort, maybe a carbamazepine, that could potentially lower atorvastatin concentrations and might make them more at risk for elevated lipids and or cardiovascular events. So definitely some interactions with atorvastatin it's important to think about, certainly. So I'd encourage you to look out for some of those common ones. And obviously, As always with the podcast, I don't go through every possible drug interaction. Just highlight some of the more important ones that I've actually seen out in clinical practice. All right, that wraps it up for today. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Go subscribe, get that free PDF at reallifepharmacology.com. And of course, support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. Any purchases there go to help directly fund the time for me to do this podcast. So I'm greatly appreciative to those of you who have supported the podcast through those means. And as always, share the podcast with a friend, colleague, coworker, student, anyone in healthcare that could benefit from a little pharmacology education. I'm going to wrap it up for today. If you want to track me down, mededucation101@gmail.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn as well. So take care. Have a great rest of your day.